Welcome to the Last Night I Watched podcast, the film review book club style podcast.
Each week, we choose a film that we think best sums up our current topic.
I'm Devon.
And I'm Luke.
And we hope you enjoy this episode.
But before we start, spoiler alert.
Hello, and welcome back to Last Night I Watched.
Hello.
We are moving over to our favourite films.
Yeah.
Mine was Eternal Sunshine, which I destined was actually my favourite film after watching it again in 9 years. So, Luke, what's your favourite film?
So, for this week, I have chosen Ghostbusters.
Ghostbusters.
I just wanted a bit of fun, because I think last week, although it's a really good film, it's a thinking film.
Thinking film. It's a thinking film.
My favourite film changes quite often. Mm-hmm. So, this is one of the films that I always love. But I've never really had like a proper in-depth conversation about it, so I thought it'd be interesting to actually have a...
Yeah, I don't think I've had a good old chat about Ghostbusters. How many people I would talk to about Ghostbusters to, though?
No, but, you know, it comes up a lot in my work. A lot mm-hmm. of people ask mm-hmm. favourite films and things like that. So it's just one that I've never really talked about, never heard a lot of, like, in-depth conversation about it. So
no.
I thought it'd be nice to do a little bit of a deep dive.
Yeah, all right. Well, as we could do a deep dive, do you want to start with the synopsis for people that haven't seen it? Be surprised if people haven't seen this film.
Yeah, exactly. So my synopsis is a little bit different, but if you watch the film, you should recognise it.
Mm-hmm.
Are you troubled by strange noises in the middle of the night? Do you experience feelings of dread in your basement or attic? Do you or any of your family ever seen a spook, spectre or ghost? If the answer is yes, then don't wait another minute. Pick up your phone and call the professionals. Ghostbusters. Our courteous, efficient staff is on call 24 hours a day to serve all of your supernatural elimination needs. We're ready to believe you.
Who are you going to call?
Ghostbusters.
So that's the advert in the middle of Ghostbusters, if anyone didn't know.
Which I think, if you actually watch that, just that little scene in depth, it actually shows a lot of character traits, which mm-hmm. I quite like.
So one thing I'll tell you is that advert they actually used as their main trailer for the film in, you know, when they released this, and they put on and they made the phone number live so people could call it.
Yeah.
And they pretty much, anytime any person called it, they pretty much, and this isn't verbatim, but it's an answer phone message from Bill Murray and Dan Aykroyd saying something like, "Hi, we're out catching ghosts right now." And that was it. That's all they got.
Yeah.
They got called 1,000 times per hour, 24 hours a day, for 6 weeks. So there's a lot of phone calls.
Yeah.
For someone to hear that it's Bill Murray and Dan Aykroyd saying, like, we're out catching ghosts right now, check later.
It's just the fact that they've made it a live phone number is just extra. Could have quite easily done the old movie, doesn't go anywhere.
Yeah.
Normally the old 555 numbers, aren't they?
They turned it into from a 555 number to a... Oh, I had the number, but I don't seem to write it down. But it was like a working one.
Yeah.
Thing is, I don't know if people would phone it necessarily because they had problems with ghosts or because it was a trailer and they want to know what's going on.
Yeah, just want to ring it. Curious, yeah.
Yeah. But I know we were watching something the other day that had like a fake emergency line and it was like a really, really long number that they were replacing with like 999. Like, you do kind of want to call it.
Yeah, that was like 40 digits.
Yeah, it was on the IT crowd. It was really funny.
Yeah, like, 0118911. Yeah, it goes on for ages.
And then it goes, da-da-dun, three. Yeah. I love that. But apparently they accidentally, all the time in like EastEnders, leave someone's phone, whenever someone gets a text message, they'll accidentally leave the phone number on the text and loads of people will text that number or call it for poops and giggles.
Just people like, let's just try it. I need to try
yeah,
it.
Yeah, it's just curiosity, isn't it?
But yeah, no, I was saying in that advert, you kind of get, so you've got Dan Aykroyd, Ray Stantz, in that, who's very, you know, Dan Aykroyd is a fast-talking character. Okay. So fast-talking.
But he had a cigarette in his hand. He smokes throughout this.
Yeah, very knowledgeable person about this. And he's out there. He's the person mainly speaking in this.
Mm-hmm.
Bill Murray, Peter Venkman, he's... half-hearted into it.
He doesn't have a lot of knowledge in it. I feel like he goes along with it because his friends are doing it.
I think he kind of sees that if it works out, there's money and fame with this as well. So he kind of like steps forward and just says his line, steps back and that. But then Bengler, he is so sort of like camera shy. He's looking down because he's on his mark.
Mm-hmm.
And then he steps forward, doesn't look properly at the camera.
Yeah.
and then looks back to see where his mark is, and then stand. And it's just a little character trait.
I didn't watch it enough to figure that out. The thing is, I know, what's the guy that is Spengler?
Harold Ramis.
Yeah, he on purposely made a acting choice to never smile during this film.
Mm.
If you actually look, he never once does he like crack a smile.
He is one of the main writers of this.
Mm-hmm. His role, he did offer it up to other people. They just didn't want it. Like I know some other people got, so Michael Keaton turned down the role of Wakeman and Spengler.
Mm.
So I think he didn't write the role for himself. I think he just stood into it when he went into it. And like I know the role of Winston.
Yeah.
Eddie Murphy was going to play it.
Yeah, well, originally this was going to be Dan Aykroyd, mm-hmm. Jim Belushi, and Eddie Murphy. Dan Aykroyd, he was actually writing lines
mm-hmm.
for Belushi when he got a phone call. Yeah,
he
wrote it for
him. He died, didn't he?
And he got called to say he died.
So that's the guy from Caddyshack, right?
He is in Animal House.
Animal House, that's the one.
Bill Murray's in Caddyshack.
In Caddyshack, yeah.
Yeah, so he was in Animal House, and he was obviously the other Blues Brother with Dan Aykroyd
as well.
So they were kind of...
Yeah, yeah. I know he was like the height of like comedy.
Talking about other people, there's a lot of kind of different things.
But Eddie Murphy was like, it was meant for him, and he signed on, he was going to do it. And then did he stop to do Coming to America?
Beverly Hills Cop.
Beverly Hills Cop.
Loads of different names, because these are all the Saturday Night Live players at the time.
Because Winston's role is actually quite small in this now. He's not one of the main people to start off with. He only comes in when they're busy.
Yeah, it's something like his originally, when he signed on, he was meant to come in something like page 16 of the script.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't come in until actually like page 90.
Yeah, he's got I feel really sorry for him, because and the only reason he signed on was because he saw the original Eddie Murphy script
yeah
and was like, this is going to be a really good role for me. And then by the time he start, you know, he was on set, got given a new script, he was just like, where's my role sort of thing.
Yeah, he was actually meant to have the it slimed me, he slimed me line. That was originally a Zeddemore line, but it got bumped back.
Oh, that sucks.
But that's the thing, a lot of this they were did it on the fly because they were so tight for the deadline
mm-hmm.
that they just rushed a lot of this.
Most of the script, pretty much all the script was ad-libbed.
Yeah.
And knowing like Bill Murray, he does go off on one. He does like to just say whatever he's thinking.
Yeah, and I think the thing is, I think this is where the Ghostbusters 2016 somewhat fell over because I think they tried to do a lot of ad-libbing in that.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is they do the whole...
I can't even remember the 2016. I just know that I didn't like the receptionist being the Thor guy.
Chris Hemsworth, yeah.
Yeah, I wasn't feeling it. Like, I get that it was like a take on the woman receptionist and, you know, roles reversed. Just didn't think it was funny.
But it was just that kind of Paul Rudd, Will Ferrell as well, mm-hmm. where they just... do a line over and over and over and over and over and over again.
Yeah.
To try and get a funny one.
Yeah.
Whereas like a lot of the ad-libbing you hear that Bill Murray does, like the whole piano, they mm-hmm. hate this.
Yeah.
That was his first thing. And the crew fell on the floor.
Yeah.
And then they went, after they did that, they did it again. And then he went, oh, there's no activity in the bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's a crime.
Yeah.
That was a first take.
Yeah. Ad-lib. Bill Murray he's quite a comic genius. Yeah. I know Sigourney Weaver signed on to this film because pretty much this is her only comedic role, and she thought she was being typecast for like action-y, sort of like more intense roles.
Yeah.
So she wanted to show people that she could do ad-lib, she could do comedy.
Yeah.
And the line where she goes, oh, you don't look like a scientist, and he says, no, they're too stuffy. She was like, no, you look like a game show host. Apparently, that was her own line. I think the line was, you look like a used car salesman.
All right.
But she changed it to, you look like a game show host.
So they were... very surprised to get her because this was post-Alien.
Oh, was it post-Alien?
Yeah, so this was after
so
Alien.
Big by
so
then.
she was a big character. This is written by Ivan Reitman, who also did Stripes and Animal House.
Okay. I've never seen Animal House. I have no draw to see Animal House. And I don't even, like, I know that, like, Animal House. I don't even know if that's the proper theme tune or if that's the one just from The Simpsons.
Yeah.
I have no idea.
They'd made loads of money, you know, so they were big hits, those films.
Mm-hmm.
She wanted kind of in on that, and like you said, want to do the... They were like, if she wants to do it, we'll get
They'll
her in for
it,
a reading. And she read the script. Can she do comedy? Like, mm-hmm. She's an amazing person to have on the script. Let's do it. Apparently, she came in, and when she did her reading, she actually read the bit where she turns into one of the terror dogs.
Where she gets possessed.
Yeah.
Okay.
And she said, oh, I should turn into one of the dogs, and mm-hmm. then basically got on all fours
Oh my gosh.
They started like snarling and things like that. And they were like, but apparently Ivan Reitman had like a massive bit of writer's block because he didn't know how to make the next bit. And she actually suggested the possession storyline.
Oh, wow.
So that for him like sparked it and he'd be like, yeah, you're on.
Wow. Because I read that they did struggle with this script because apparently it was going to be like in the future.
Yes.
And they were going to have like wands instead of like the Ray Pax thing, which just doesn't sound as good.
Originally, so Dan Aykroyd's script was that they were in the future. Ghostbusters were like essentially like the police.
Yeah, yeah. But his idea, apparently, if they got it going, would have cost $300 million to make.
Yeah, so yeah, it was actually Ivan Reitman that just said, no, I think this should be a setting up a business story and we should set it up in New York and it works, I think, because that is this whole film is just them starting.
Well, this film was the highest grossing comedy of all time until Home Alone in 1990. So although 1984 to 1990 isn't a long period of time, this is from ever to, you know, 1990. So that's pretty good.
Yeah, definitely.
And
definitely.
Home Alone was something else.
Yeah.
I'm going to give you the numbers. So it cost 30 mil to make.
Yeah.
Grossed almost 300 mil.
Yeah.
So it grossed how much Dan Aykroyd wanted this to cost.
Yeah.
But 300 mil is really good.
Yeah, definitely.
Like putting 30 in and getting 300 out. And it came out on the 8th of June, 1984.
Yeah, so I'd read about the actual kind of deal because, so they went to this guy called Frank Price at Columbia who'd done Stripes for them.
Mm-hmm.
But Stripes cost them 10 million. And they made 80 million.
Oh, okay.
So when they went to them and said, right, I'm doing Ghostbusters, they were like, yeah, how much is it worth? And apparently Ivan Reitman held up the script and said, it feels about 30 million.
That's hilarious.
And then they were like, yeah, we'll go for it.
Oh my God.
Sort of thing. So they just gave them, said, okay, got it.
That's amazing.
The only problem is we won it on June 8th.
Oh.
Which was something like 12, 13 months away.
Oh. Yes, because I read that in the test, with like the first screenings they did, there was a lot of stuff that hadn't been edited out yet. Special effects hadn't been put in completely. Yes. And they showed the audience, and apparently the audience didn't even pick up on it.
Yeah, so there was a lot of cards that just says SFX goes here.
Yeah.
In the test screening. But the special effects is quite interesting with this as well, because the only people that really did proper high-end special effects, this company called ILM that does all the Star Wars and stuff, they were actually working on an indie film. So they're working for Spielberg at that point, so they weren't willing to come and work for this comedy film.
Yeah.
And then a guy called Richard Edlund, who worked at ILM, wanted to leave and basically cherry-picked a load of people out of
what he wanted
ILM.
To take with him. Ouch.
Yeah. And they set up a company called Boss Films. Mm. And this is where Boss Films started.
Oh, so it's like their brainchild. Yeah. Oh, that's cool. Well, I'm sure I don't know who you just said, but I'm sure they're pretty bummed about it. Yeah, so there's a lot of ghosts in this film.
Yes.
So let's start off. The very first scene, you're seeing Bill Murray sit down with two students doing the, what are they called? The cards.
ESP test.
That's it. An ESP test, which is pretty much like a card with a picture on it. And you hold up this card to the picture, the person that's doing the test.
Yep.
You see the picture, and it's like me showing you a Queen of Hearts, but you can only see the back of it, and me going, what is this card?
Yeah.
And the subject has to say if it was right or wrong, you know, what shape it is.
It's extra sensory perception.
And he's got a really like beautiful lady, blonde hair, very pretty. And then he's got this kind of other guy. He's got curly hair, just a random guy.
Yeah.
And if you get the question wrong, you get a shock.
Yeah.
And the guy was getting a shock no matter if he got the question wrong or he got the question right. He was getting a shock. Whereas the woman, he was convincing her that she was essentially psychic.
Yeah.
Any question, anything she said, he was like, oh, my word, how do you know that? And then, put the card away. She never got shocked. So he was just like the first scene you see Bill Murray being an absolute let.
Yeah, there's a whole thing online about technically what Bill Murray says is incorrect, trying to see what negative reinforcement has on effect on thing. And everyone online is going, oh, he's wrong, he's wrong, he's wrong. He is only wrong if the boy is the test subject.
Yeah.
If the girl is the test subject, he is actually correct because
she's not getting any
of the negative effects.
Yeah, she's just seeing someone else get it.
Exactly. So there's loads and loads of hate online saying, oh no, he's got it wrong, he's incorrect. But I think he's actually right.
Yeah.
and it's based on who is being tested.
Yeah, but like, and then you see the boy go because he just storms out.
Yeah.
And then you see them alone and he's literally just trying to pick up this girl. Saying, and then Dan Aykroyd's character comes in and says, we've got, the library have called and they've got an unusual thing?
Yes, yeah.
They went to the library.
Everything is, it's the best sighting since 19, the, you know, Palooka thingy of 1972. I mean, Dan Aykroyd knows his stuff. He knows his his ghost stuff.
Are we going to talk about Dan Aykroyd and Dan Aykroyd's family? Because Dan Aykroyd, my God, he is... I don't know the word. He's like... He's a fast talker, but I feel like... Okay, this is the only thing that's coming to my head, and it could be wrong, and there could be a lot nicer way of saying it. But he's like a scab. Because, like, you pick it off, and there's, like, so much, like, going on underneath. What is a nicer way of saying that?
An iceberg?
I don't know.
Because it's only the tip of the iceberg?
And maybe. A lot maybe that's a nicer way of a scab. But, you know, there's, like, festering wound.
Yeah, I wouldn't describe anyone as a festering wound as being, is that a nice way of saying it?
No, but he's got like this, if you put like a festering wound under a microscope, there's like a lot going on in there. There's like, it's amazing to look at like up close, like look away far away, it's gross.
Like a Petri dish maybe.
Yeah. Like, put like a festering wound in a Petri dish.
Same festering wound.
Well, it just is
someone's
amazing.
Gonna be eating their lunch now while listening to this, going, oh, I'm gonna just
I'm
sit
not
down.
Saying like it's like gangrene or something, but there's like a lot of like stuff going on, you know, there's little thing flowing around and it's just marvelous. Whereas you put an iceberg under the microscope, what are you gonna see? Water.
I mean, you might see more if you look careful.
Yeah, it might be some
just trying to get you away from festering wounds.
Okay, but he's very, very interesting. You see him up top and you just think he's a comedian, you think he's a task talker, and in this film you think he smokes an awful lot. I'm surprised he's still alive to this day because the amount he smokes in Ghostbusters 1. But yeah, he goes deep. That river runs deep. Maybe that's what I'm thinking. That's a nicer way of doing it. This river runs deep. There we go.
Cool. Yeah, so he, historically, his family has been into the paranormal.
Historically? My gosh, do they go back a long way. This guy needs his own program on, like, Discovery Channel or Sign.
So his great-grandfather actually wrote about psychics, mediums, and levitators in his journals.
Yeah, and there was, like, pictures and everything, wasn't there?
And he goes really, kind of, really in-depth. And his dad actually wrote a book called A History of Ghosts.
Yeah. Like, I'm so not surprised that he wrote a script about ghosts.
Yeah, so he actually, he said, I come up with the idea of Ghostbusters while reading the Journal of the American Society of Psychical Research. So he was clearly reading.
Yeah. He's interested in it. And I think that kind of shows, because when they, like, when they come across different things, like when they go to the library and they find, you know, the ectoplasm and stuff.
Yeah.
He's really into it and he, like, talks about it. And the words he uses aren't, I would say, one what that every person would use, but somebody who is
in that ghost world
would.
It's all legitimate, quote unquote, items.
That makes
it's
all things that have been before. It's nothing. It's not like gobbledygook where he's just made this up. And that's what I like about this film compared to R.I.P.D. because this film seems to have like historical backing, as in like his grandfather's his dad. That's all in journals. It's all what people have talked about. Whereas R.I.P.D. it seems like it's all just made up and like they're just pulling it at the back of their minds. Whereas Dan Aykroyd seems to know what he's talking about.
Yeah, he's got the finger on the ghostly pulse.
Yeah, he uses, you know, he's got the vocab, he sort of knows what he's talking about, and, you know, you can sense that as somebody watching. It doesn't feel like... I think that's what Ghostbusters, it feels like it could be real, like it you could have a team of Ghostbusters. You know, they are like paranormal investigators and stuff like this, but, you know, if you mix science with that sort of stuff, it could...
Yeah.
It doesn't seem implausible.
No, definitely.
So the ghost that appears... So there's a ghost, the lady ghost in the New York library.
Yeah.
The first one we see. Is that sighting or is that just like they put it in? Do you know anything about her?
I don't know kind of historically whether there's any ghost in the New York library.
I think so. Hold on.
Just while you're saying about that, though, talking about special effects, so the books floating across that you see to start off with.
Yeah.
That is... a practical effect. That is just, it's on wires.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not special effects. And the cards flying out the drawers, that's practical as well. Mm-hmm. That is just someone is behind the drawers with a straw and they just blow them all out. Okay. So it's not, although there's a lot of visual, you know, CGI, early CGI in this film, that is all practical, which I think is pretty cool.
Yeah, definitely. I'm just on the Wikipedia page for Ghostbusters, so I'm not going into great depth. She's called the Grey Lady.
Yeah.
She's Dr. Eleanor Twitty, or the Library Ghost. Yeah, doesn't say much about her, but she does return in the 2009 video game, where the much of her history is properly revealed. The Ghostbusters have to uncover her tragic story of her death. So, you know, if you're interested in that.
We mentioned in the video game, if you are interested in Ghostbusters, I recommend Ghostbusters 1, Ghostbusters 2, and then do Ghostbusters for the video game, because Ghostbusters the video game it's acts like as Ghostbusters 3.
Yeah, it's like a film in its own sense,
and
isn't it?
And it ties the two together, because I played the game on the Xbox more recently than I'd watch any of the films.
Yeah.
And the music is the same in all of them.
Mm-hmm.
So as soon as I heard the music when I watched Ghostbusters this time around, I was just smiling because it was just all of the like little songs that it has throughout, you know, the little theme tunes.
Yeah. The thing I found funny is I didn't play this game. I just listened to Luke do it. And you could hear the voice of like Spengler and Ray and Winston. Do you hear Winston? I can't remember.
Yeah.
And then like very, very, very occasionally you'll hear Bill Murray. Yeah. Like he's barely in it. And we were talking about this when it was on. And apparently to get him to come and film his voices, he just barely turned up.
Yeah.
And they finally turned up. He recorded like half an hour's worth and then was like, all right, lunch. And just left.
Yeah.
So that's why you barely get any of his.
So a lot of the time, so you play like a rookie and you go in, you kind of, and you split off quite often.
Yeah.
And that's because Bill Murray's character splits off and goes off somewhere else because he just didn't record any lines, basically.
It wasn't happening. But did you know that after this film, Bill Murray just wanted to retire from acting? Like he just wanted to nope out. He moved to Paris and then, yeah, he was just done until 1989. When it's Scrooged, which is your favourite Christmas film.
My favourite Christmas film, yeah.
There's a nice link between your favourite film and your favourite Christmas film.
Yeah, so Bill Murray was actually in Paris before this as well. So I think there is some link. And they didn't know whether he was going to turn up. They was like, because Ivan Reitman was saying like, oh, yeah, we've got Bill Murray's going to do this. And then
is he going to turn up or not?
Dan said that he's doing it.
Yeah.
It got to the day of filming and he just arrived. And they were like they hadn't seen him. Anytime until the day of the first day of filming, he just turned up and he was there on set. And
no, Bill Murray, he could easily just not turn up.
They were just like, well, Danny says he's going to do it, so he's going to be here. And everyone's like, all right, okay.
Oh my gosh. Has Dan Aykroyd ever done a program, like a ghost program or an alien program? Because he also believes in aliens, am I right?
Yeah. He's a big kind of general paranormal.
Yeah.
There's probably something on something like the Travel Channel or something, I'm sure.
We don't get the Channel in the UK. 100%. I'd really like to know if he's done anything.
If not, he'll be a person on a, you know what, they do those My Ghost Stories
Are. We've watched the one with the guy that did the morning program.
Regis Philbert.
Yeah, we watched that one randomly because it was like on at like 11 o'clock at night and that was weird to say the least. But do you know, talking about haunted stuff, because this whole film is that, the prison that they filmed that little scene in where the Ghostbusters have been arrested?
Yeah.
That prison was said to be actually haunted. And the crew and everyone kept having scratches appear like all over them with like no explanation whatsoever.
Yeah.
So after they finished and wrapped up, they were all really, really worried about having to do any reshoots.
Yeah.
And the director sat down and looked at all the scenes and was like, no, you know, we're not going back there. But he made that decision because he just sort of looked at it and go, yeah, I think we've got enough. Just because him and any of the crew, nobody wanted to go back. So even the director was like, I don't really want to go back there. It was just not a nice place to be.
Yeah.
So we're just, this is fine.
But this is the thing with the, you saying this is fine. A lot of the times where the special effects people sent over like, oh, what do you think of this? So they'd send over something going, what do you think of this? And they didn't hear anything back.
Yeah.
It's because it ended in the final cut. They were literally just constantly quick. Didn't hear any feedback. Being like, oh, you know, is this okay? Just showing them something.
Yeah.
And then that was it. And it's even, you know, one of the main things about this film is the music, Ray Parker Jr.
Mm-hmm. Ghostbusters song. Yeah.
He came up with the idea and then put it on a cassette, sent it to them, saying, what do you think?
Mm.
And didn't hear back, and it was in the film.
Oh my gosh.
Like, they were so...
Do they not need to sign anything, though?
I think all these kind of scripts are done, kind of, all the deals are done.
The contracts, okay.
Before and at the very end, before, you know, post-production.
Yeah.
Before it actually goes out.
Well, if they didn't have a lot of time, yeah. So when the, there's a bit when we were talking about the Grey Lady, you sort of see her ghost and she's just sort of, you know, like an apparition of a lady floating. And then Ray goes to talk to her.
Yeah.
And he sort of like puts his arm out to sort of get her attention. And she turns into like a proper, like evil sort of spirit thing, like proper monstery screaming. Apparently audiences freaked out the first time they saw that. They like jumped, they were screaming in the audience. And so not only were they screaming and freaking out, some were like properly screaming and the other people were absolutely wetting themselves.
Yeah.
Because of like sort of the surprise of it.
Yeah.
And I don't know if the CGI looked that jokey back then, because it's not a realistic monster.
And I think you get that immediate sort of comic relief in the fact that it goes straight into the and then goes straight into the theme tune and the title card. I can see it's kind of got that initial shock value because you don't expect it. You know, there's a ghost there. That's kind of weird enough. But then
I think sometimes as well, you can probably be freaked out. You could be so freaked out that you laugh. It's like when you go to those like haunted house things.
Yeah.
Like we were talking about it this week, actually. We went to the Saw ride in Thorpe Park like years and years ago. And they had like a pop-up Saw ride, which they may, I think it's like a permanent thing now, isn't it? But I think we went for like a Halloween thing. And while you were waiting, people were just popping up at you. But the thing is, I think they had done it the year before and I think somebody actually got punched or something. So they then decided to make like windows, didn't they? So they never actually touched you.
Yeah, they jumped behind a cage.
Yeah, it was always like they couldn't touch you, you couldn't touch them.
Yeah.
But the amount of times you'd be standing next to what you thought was a wall, you turn around and there'd be like the Ring girl sort of standing there, just sort of her face. And you instantly jump and then you laugh at like, oh, I've been an idiot.
Yeah.
But oh, I hate that with an absolute passion where you just properly scream and jump and then like, oh, look at me, I'm such an idiot.
Oh, you got me.
It's just, you just like go from such fear to such embarrassment so quickly. I hate it.
Saying about kind of first shots and things like that, there was an instance though where they did actually have to shoot a lot of the scenes twice.
Okay.
Because they had an issue with the name.
Oh yeah, I remember hearing about this somewhere. I can't remember anything.
So. Yeah, so they had an issue because they basically wanted to call it Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
But there is a 70s TV show.
Okay.
Owned by a company called Filmation that was called Ghostbusters.
Mm-hmm.
And they wouldn't allow them to use it.
No.
So they had to go with... I've heard a producer use the term Ghost Breakers.
Okay.
Online seems to use the term Ghost Smashers.
Oh my God, they're both awful.
But apparently on set, they shot two versions.
Okay.
So like when they hang the sign up above.
Yeah.
They hang up a Ghostbusters sign, but then they had to hang up a Ghost Breakers or Ghost
Smashers.
It's
like a hand-drawn sign.
Yeah. So they had to do two shots of that.
Yeah.
Until they got to the final, you know, the final scene of the film where you've got
clapping.
All the crowd and they're going, Ghostbusters, Ghostbusters. And apparently one of the people on set ran to a payphone, rang up the people and just said, listen to this, held the phone out. This crowd of people screaming Ghostbusters and said, just get the name.
Yeah.
Just get the name, do what you can, get the name. But they couldn't get the name from this Filmation and Columbia were trying to buy it from Filmation. Mm-hmm. And there was a guy called Frank Price who was working at Columbia at the time. And Columbia was then bought by Coca-Cola.
Oh, okay.
Sparked your interest as the number one Diet Coke fan in the world.
Yeah. I'm drawn into the story.
And they just basically didn't...
Just chuck some money at it.
No, they didn't... What is this film?
Oh.
This comedy film, cancel it. They didn't want to know.
So what, even when they put 30 mil into it?
So they didn't want to know. They were like, it's a waste of money.
Oh my gosh.
So
Coke, what are you doing?
So Frank Price, so he basically left.
Yeah.
He left Columbia, but he kind of signed over loads of powers to Ivan Reitman to say, just keep doing it.
Okay.
He then worked for Universal.
Mm-hmm.
Universal owns Filmation.
Oh, so it was
just
all in-house. Yeah.
Let them have the name.
So wait, who put this film out?
So this is Columbia.
Okay.
Columbia put the film out. Columbia is owned by Coca-Cola. But yeah, it's quite funny that he went for it and then happened to be the new owner of the other and just said, yeah, let him have it.
Yeah.
But
he moved over to the other company and still wanted to help him out.
Yeah,
and
wanted
nice
to help him out, which is nice. It was quite funny though, because later on, when it did so well, Filmation said, oh, because we gave you the name, can we make the cartoon for you, because that's what Filmation did. Yeah. So they said, can we make the cartoon? And they said, no. So what they did was then they made a cartoon show of that 70s show.
Okay.
Called The Ghostbusters.
Oh, and that's why it's, the cartoon is called The Real Ghostbusters.
So that's why the actual other cartoon.
Yeah, because the 90, what is it? 90, I've got it written down here, is in 1989, is a cartoon called The Real Ghostbusters. Yeah. That's why it's called The Real Ghostbusters.
Yes. And in the actual cartoon, the cartoon, they get around it by saying that they are the real Ghostbusters, mm-hmm. and the people in the film is actors playing them.
Oh, okay.
So that's how they get around it in the cartoon, why it's called The Real Ghostbusters.
Because do you remember when we were on holiday and we were watching...
Spanish TV.
We had like Disney Channel up on, I think it was Spanish TV. And they kept
all the programs were in English, but then it got to the adverts.
And it was all in Spanish. And it was like Playmobil had done out a real Ghostbusters toy, and it was like,
I don't know, but Ghost is Phantasma.
Yeah, so it was like Real Phantasma, and we couldn't understand why it was called The Real Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
And we were just like, is that just like a Spanish thing? Yeah. Like, we couldn't get it. Because the weird thing was, it was advertised in Spanish, but the box was in English, wasn't it? So it was just weird. But then when I was doing some looking at this, when they did the film was for an adult audience.
Yeah.
So it was, you know, wasn't meant for kids. And then the cast and crew, you know, surprised to find that kids loved it. You know, they loved the ghost. They loved, you know, Slimer. They loved everything about it.
Yeah.
So that's why they started the spin-off cartoon in 1989, which I guess we called The Real Ghostbusters because they couldn't have the name.
Yeah.
And then they did Ghostbusters 2 in 1989, which was toned down a lot on the adult elements. Yeah. So like no longer Ray was smoking in every scene.
Yeah.
And things like that. So they really toned it down, you know, the language, sort of some of the adult-y sort of
suggestive scenes and things like that. Yeah,
exactly. They turned it all right down. I can't remember Ghostbusters 2 that well. I think I liked it. I liked the photo. I liked the art piece that turned into be real.
Viggo the Carpathian.
Yeah, I think I like Ghostbusters 2. I think I like it.
You like it because it's got the guy that was in Ally McBeal.
Yeah, I do like it. Yeah, it's got the guy.
I'd know you.
I forgot that I had the guy Ally McBeal, but I think that's what I say every time it comes on. Yeah. But I just like she, you see more about her in it, and she's got a baby this time.
Yeah, and I think Lewis Tully has a bit more of a role in it, in the fact that he's kind of a Ghostbuster as well in some kind of...
I think doesn't he just do their taxes?
I can't remember. At some point, he's in a suit. In a Ghostbusters jumpsuit.
Is he?
Yeah.
Oh, see, I do think I like the second one.
I haven't seen it for a while.
No, I haven't seen the second one. Yeah, let's do it. I do like the second one, though. I like more of the thought, you know, like there's that evil running through New York. That's why everyone's really angry and stuff. Yeah, I do like that. Whereas I think this storyline where they've got Dana, who's Sigourney Weaver, originally goes to see the Ghostbusters, and she's like their first client, isn't she?
Yeah.
And she... her apartment's just acting weird, like the TV's on all the time, even though she goes out. She puts eggs on the side and they burst and boil. And then she opens her fridge and she sees like a portal to where Goza lives.
Yeah.
And there's terror dogs shouting. This is all in her fridge. And then she closes it and then she goes to Ghostbusters. Veikman comes around. There's nothing there. And then she goes back and at one point she's sitting in her chair and like hands pop out of her chair, which is probably the scariest bit of the whole film, I think.
Yeah.
And then she gets like dragged into a room and then she turns into this like Zool goddess possessed person. And it's because the architect of the first of the building was like a spiritualist and he made a portal. It's a bit far-fetched, that side of things, I think. And then Goza appears, Goza the Destroyer.
Yeah.
Come to destroy Earth. Whereas like Ghostbusters 2, where there's like people who built New York, built sewers to run evil underneath. I kind of like, it just seems a lot more easier.
But then if you then play the video game, it links them all in. And
it makes it
really like, essentially, you know, they mentioned that this Dana's apartment is like a satellite.
Yeah, it's or like a beacon.
An antenna.
Yeah.
They then also go into the fact that, so the Sedgwick Hotel, which is the hotel where Slimer is. That's another thing. The library is another antenna. And they're linked by this.
So you know the Ghostbuster film that got pushed back that was meant to come out last year?
Afterlife, yes.
Yeah. What is that like 3? Is it going to link all of them? What?
Yeah, so I think this is, I don't know much about it, and I've tried to not read too much about it, but from what I can tell is that, so that's done by Jason Reitman, which is Ivan Reitman's son.
Love it.
A lot more interest in it. Mm-hmm. He basically said that he had a vision of seeing a girl who was, so a young girl who finds out that she's related to the original Ghostbusters.
Okay.
So I think from what
I've
seen...
It's not difficult. There's four guys. One of them could... Well, there's three originals. One of them could have had a kid. It's not...
I think she's related to Spengler, and then they find the old Towan, and it goes from there, sort of thing. I don't know. I purposely haven't read anything about it, because I kind of want to hear, rather than hear people talk about it.
That makes sense. One thing I quite liked about the... So the Ghostbusters have these... What are they called? The ray gun things?
So they're just the wands, but they're attached to the proton packs.
Yeah,
basically.
So proton packs, and they then, you know, when they come across a ghost or whatever, they shoot it and it sort of traps them, and then they put it into a ghost trap.
Yeah.
And then they take it back to Ghostbusters HQ and drop it off into like a storage facility.
Yeah.
And then sort of the EPA person, EPA.
Walter Peck.
Yes, EPA. What does that stand for?
Environmental Protection Agency.
Yeah, this loser just sees them, because he sees, they get a lot of hype, don't they? They go on like different talk shows, they're on the front of Time magazine. Yeah. And he decides to come in and wants to have a look because he thinks this is affecting the ozone layer or whatever. And then he turns off him and a police officer make this electrician turn off the...
Yeah, the requirement for an electrician to pull a lever, I'm not really sure. The fact they've got like, turn it off, and he goes, doo.
Yeah, there's
it.
A lot of people there. There was a lot of handles there, though, to be fair. And then they turn it off, and because the cage almost for the storage facility is being turned off, all these ghosts and stuff go out. And I quite liked when you see all the ghosts and stuff fly out, because there's loads of them.
Yeah, the initial kind of explosion on the roof, I don't like. It looks too, like, looking at it now, you can see it's wrong. But all the, like, little, you know, them flying away after that.
Yeah.
And then coming out the exhaust.
I just love it. Like, you see, there's, like, one that's, like, driving a taxi, Slimer's eating hot dog.
Taxi one really then reminds me of Scrooge.
Yeah, 100%.
So I kind of like that.
Yeah, that's my favourite too. And Slimer, he's like eating hot dogs. Also, Slimer, he's like, he was a huge thing in the cartoons. I remember watching the cartoons. He was huge in the cartoons. He's not very big in the
film. No, so he's not actually called Slimer in the film.
The crew started calling him Slimer halfway through, because there's a bigger scene where he's called something else. I can't remember what it is.
He was called Onion Head.
Yes. There was a bigger scene and that was cut. So when they saw that cut, and then the only scene that you really see Slimer is he slimes Bill Murray, they then call him Slimer on set after that. But you sort of see him hot dogs. I can't remember, in Ghostbusters, is he even in Ghostbusters 2?
I can't remember. Literally, I haven't seen Ghostbusters 2 in so long.
He's like one of the crew
in the cartoon, yeah.
Yeah. So I remember watching the cartoon, and then I think I watched the cartoon, I don't think we were allowed to watch the film when I was younger, and I only think I watched the cartoon at my friend's house. I remember watching the film years later. I think I even watched the film with you.
Possible.
I was surprised to see that Slimer wasn't a big part of this.
One thing with Slimer is that the guy that was making it, a guy called Steve Johnson, who made what Slimer looks like, and... Before, I think it was like he was about to show it to kind of all the people.
Yeah.
This is what I think Slimer is. And the night before he was about to show them, they said, oh, by the way, make him look like John Belushi. John Belushi.
Yeah,
when you watch it, there is kind of scenes like in Animal House that match very much that hot dog eating thing. It's very much like a scene in Animal House. And there's lots of things that seem very... Steve Johnson said that he... didn't and told them that he did.
Oh.
So he said he just didn't. He just said,
I did
and
it.
And they're like, oh, yeah, it really looks like him. Oh, but he'd already done it. And he was like,
I've done too much work.
That's so clever. Just say, look, I've done it.
But imagine if somebody goes, I've done it. Doesn't look anything like him. And the guy puts work in. He'd be like, not quite. You would just go, oh, yeah, it looks great. Thanks for that.
Yeah.
100%. Talk about the storage facility. When Spengler is talking about the storage facility, he knows that there's a problem beforehand.
Yeah.
And he's like, he's sort of saying it's over, full. And
holding on in there. Or something.
Yeah. And Winston and Ray don't, I think kind of Ray understands what he's talking about, what Winston doesn't.
Yeah.
And he's like saying there's so much in there that if it was a Twinkie, and he pulled up a Twinkie, he said if it was going to be a Twinkie, it'd be like 30 foot or something, or 300 feet or something.
35 foot.
There we go. And then he was just like, what is it, like, that's a damn big Twinkie or something.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're in the UK.
Yeah.
We don't do Twinkies. I can honestly say I've never had a Twinkie.
No.
Have you ever had a Twinkie?
Yes, I have.
Never had one.
But because it's a class as an American candy over here, they're incredibly expensive.
They're incredibly expensive. We bought some today. I'm just going to go get them. So excuse the rustling. We bought a box today. They were £5.50 for a box of 10, which works out to be $7.70, is it?
78 cents.
Yeah. 78.
$7.78 for this box of Twinkies.
And it's, what, a 10 pack?
Yeah. So American audience.
Is that a lot?
I think they'll be shocked.
Is that a lot?
I would have thought so, yes. Yeah, almost $10 for a pack of... It's a dollar a Twinkie.
Oh, gosh. That's a lot. Anyway, so we've got them here.
Yep.
You're going to hear my first...
Devon's first on air.
On air
eating
Twinkie.
Of a Twinkie.
And it's not 35 foot. Don't know how big it is.
I have had Twinkies.
The thing
before,
is, I really hope I like these because I got like a 10 pack now.
If not, I'm eating probably 9.5 Twinkies.
Oh, and here comes the dog.
Yeah, the dog said the rustling.
The dog's been asleep the whole time.
I'm going in anyway.
But wait, so how do you eat? Do you just...
Bite. Okay. Just go for it.
Do I dip it into a coffee first or anything?
Just enjoy the Twinkie for the Twinkie okay, to start
sorry,
for.
I don't know what the custom is. Oof. Soft. I don't like it. It's a very, very dry cake with I was hoping to be marshmallow, but I don't think it is. What is that?
It's like a cream.
It's like an unflavoured cream.
Yeah, it's like a...
I think I might dip it in my coffee.
It's like an unchocolated mini roll, essentially.
Like an unchocolated mini roll. This is the stuff that you have in a mini roll, but they do it so thinly.
In a spiral kind of swirl, isn't it?
And the cake is just so dry. What time of day do you people eat a Twinkie? Like, is it a lunchtime snack? Is it a dinner snack? What is it?
Yeah, we'll have to sort of ask our social media world.
I keep wanting to lick the cream and it be a marshmallow, but it's still not. And is it the same flavour cream throughout?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I'm not going to find like a bit of chocolate or jam or something?
No, no. I'm trying to eat this so quickly just to get back.
I'm not even going to think I'm going to finish this.
But no, they're quite sweet.
Very sweet.
Do you think you'd be able to get through 35 feet of this?
I don't think I'm going to get through a whole one. My God, I feel a bit sick. So is that like a daily thing that people just... Is this like a treat food or like a daily item?
Well, I think it's a treaty thing, but I don't...
Would it be in a lunchbox? Is it a lunchbox kind of food?
Possibly.
We put these in our son's lunchbox, maybe they'll go quicker. And also, what is the little logo guy's name? Has he got a name? Oh, look, there's other ones on the back. Oh, that one looks like a mini roll.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, and you've got donut ones. Ooh. So there is like a cow. Oh, Twinkie the Kid, I think is his name.
Twinkie the Kid.
So he's like a cowboy Twinkie.
Why we have to personify things that we're eating?
Why does it need to be a cowboy? The rest of the packaging looks kind of spacey. Why wouldn't he be like a space cowboy? Like
a space cowboy.
Or like an astronaut or something.
Yeah.
Like it's got a huge Twinkie on the front and then it says product enlarged to show detail. How much detail do you need on a cake and cream? So now that we've experienced our Twinkies, do you know that after Spengler died, outside the firehouse that they used for filming, loads and loads of people put like Twinkies out the front for him.
Mm.
So it was like covered in Twinkies. That's cool. It was really sweet.
Yeah.
And I got a nice little link for you, knowing I like link. So the firehouse that was used and people put Twinkies out the front for was used as a mechanic shop in the 1994 film The Mask, starring Jim Carrey.
Jim Carrey, so we'd link back to last week.
Yep, who was in our Eternal Sunshine. Exactly. Everyone knows how I love a link between films.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, Hook and Ladder 8 is what it is, but it's actually now a working fire station again.
Oh, is it? Again? Yeah. Oh, that's nice, because it was used for so much filming. Yeah, like, it was a location to be.
But if you look, actually, on the Hook and Ladder, if you look at Hook and Ladder 8, just Google it, the fire logo has the little Ghostbuster
in
the centre of their logo, which is quite cool. Yeah. Odd link, but to go to props.
Yeah.
Having just taken in a Twinkie for your first time.
Yeah. I don't have to rate that, do I?
No. You might be wondering where I'm going with this. We're talking about props. So in our entertainment memorabilia live auction in 2019, we had a lot of Ghostbusters props, so I had a good year that year. One of which included a bag of Stay Puft marshmallows.
From 1984.
So a bag of unopened marshmallows from
1984. Yuck.
So these are, you know, Stay Puft marshmallows with the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man on there, with the thing saying stays puffed even when toasted. Had an expiration date of February 12th, 1984. And they had an estimated value of £2,000 to £3,000.
Oh my gosh, what did they look like?
They were brown.
Yeah.
But they were cool. I was really, really kind of cool to see them and was it's just cool. It's just a little 100%. Bit of history.
And, the Stave Puff Marshmallow Man suit that was in the film cost, to like I think to make, approximately was $20,000.
Mm.
Three were made. All were destroyed during filming.
Well, they burn them at the end, sort of thing.
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah, because they roasted him, didn't they? Yeah. So, toasted.
Yes, they had like a screamy face. Yeah. I wonder how much money as well that they spent on the marshmallow that just came crashing to the floor in the film. Yeah. Because that annoyed me because when... So throughout the scene, you see like marshmallow falling to the floor and it's like everywhere.
Yeah.
And like Dana is like turned into a terror dog. She comes out. She's missed the marshmallow blowing up. She completely missed it. She was inside a terror dog. And then when she comes out downstairs to say hello to the crowd and to get in the car, she's got marshmallow everywhere. It's all over her hair. And then when they drive away, the road is completely, like, pristine, no marshmallows.
Yeah.
Whereas we've just seen that entire road get destroyed and marshmallow everywhere. So then whoever was, like, in charge of the marshmallow was very overhanded in some aspects and very underhanded in others.
Well, so the marshmallow was actually shaving cream.
Oh, that makes sense.
And Dan Aykroyd loved it, and he was just constantly smearing it over himself. So if you notice, he is absolutely covered in it.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have done very well from this shaving foam.
Menthol.
Because it was menthol shaving foam.
Looks allergic to mint.
So yeah, so I wouldn't have done very well on the set.
I work for a children's charity, and occasionally we make like sensory things for kids. And one of my work colleagues, she's like loves sensory stuff, so she makes it all the time to like dry out different parts. My God, it's so nice. Like she mixes like I think it's shaving foam with corn flour. It feels like holding a cloud. It is the nicest thing I think I've ever felt. And the amount of times I'll just like walk through the floor going back to my office where I'm in the office and just like touch this cloud-based thing because you just can't not. It's the most calming thing known to man. So, I think I would have been like him. I do love touching it. Yeah.
Cornflour and shaving foam.
Yeah, it smells so nice as well. So did you know that this film was nominated for 2 Oscars?
I'm guessing special effect.
Yes, one for special effects and one for best song.
Yes.
And it won a BAFTA for best song and it got nominated for a BAFTA for best visual effects.
It's the one thing with Ghostbusters, though, that I'm not a fan of the song.
Oh, it's iconic.
It's iconic, though, but yeah. I just don't like it. It's just so, I don't know, it's probably because I've watched it to death.
Yeah, but it's just like, the thing is what's ruined it for me is like kids' parties.
Yeah.
I think that's what's done it, because it's no matter, even like I'll go to kids' parties today and it'll be playing and kids are like on a like a weird old-fashioned like disco where it smells like vomit and they're dancing out to Ghostbusters.
Yeah, I think that's probably what it is. It's just one of those things.
It's like the Friends soundtrack.
Yeah.
And people call it the Friends song, which bugs me, but 100% that'll be it as kids' disco.
It should just remind me of the film, but it probably is also reminding me of kind of sweaty village halls.
Yeah, that always smell like vomit and jelly. Yeah. It got nominated for Golden Globe for Best Song, Best Motion Picture, Comedy or Musical, and Bill Murray got Best Comedy or Musical Actor. Yeah, did all right. Nominated right. Didn't win much, but at least it's always nice to be nominated.
Mm. Going back on to props. So one of the other items, so there was a lot of Ghostbusters in that auction.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I really loved was one of the kind of like the top lots from that auction was we had one of the hero ghost traps.
Mm-hmm.
It was actually a hero ghost trap that was used in both Ghostbusters 1 and Ghostbusters 2.
Oh, that's quite lovely.
So you can't get two films for one.
Yeah. It's like the plane that you had.
Yes. So there's a plane that we had that was in Indy and The Mummy.
That's just so cool.
Such a cool plane, yeah. So yeah, Hero Ghost Trap come with the foot pedal and a remote control that kind of automates the doors open. Yeah. You could kind of roll it in, doors, all the lights come on, everything like that. It's really cool. Estimated £80,000 to £100,000. Normally, I wouldn't talk about where things were sold to.
Nope. Daystrom.
Because, you know, you don't talk about kind of buyers. But there was a
sense of confidentiality.
Yeah. There was a Entertainment Tonight interview.
Yep.
That a Mr. Zach Bagans did.
Zach Bagans.
And he did a tour of his Haunted Museum.
Yep.
In Las Vegas.
I love this tour. The guy, like, the reporter freaks out when he sits in the, like, creepy chair, doesn't he?
Yeah.
I think everyone should probably go and watch this tour because it's just so funny.
Yeah. And then, but basically, so Zach Bagans on that shows you his little Ghostbusters room that he has. And he bought a lot of the items in this auction. Okay. And he mentions that he spent $330,000.
Oof. So he bought, bought quite a lot.
So he bought quite a few. And you can see kind of with the prop store COAs on display at the Haunted Mansion in Las Vegas. So,
so cool.
Normally, I wouldn't mention anything like this, but because...
He's mentioned it, huge Zach Bagan fans.
Yeah.
I think we have to.
Yeah, cool little thing just to kind of know that they're there. I would say, what would I want to own from this? I'd want to own that ghost trap because it was cool. And I got to kind of, you know, handle it.
Yeah. Yeah.
What would you?
I am thinking. I think those ESP cards, they'd be quite cool. Also like some of the goo that they put into. I know that would be like 1984, so it'd be pretty gross.
Yeah.
Or if it might be hardened or fallen apart. Some of that would be quite cool. I don't know. If anybody gave me anything from the film, I think I'd be happy. Nothing too big. I don't want like a terror dog. Yeah, give me anything. I'd be quite happy. Kill Count?
Yeah, I'll go on to Kill Count.
So yeah, let's go over to Kill Count. So Kill Count was a little bit weird because there wasn't really any proper deaths.
No.
There was people...
Yeah, considering there's loads of ghosts.
Yeah.
It doesn't really any... No one really died.
So I've kind of got two, like, kind of that I feel all right about. So you got Gozer, who's like Gozer the Destroyer who comes to destroy all of humanity.
Yeah.
She does get destroyed by the end because they cross the streams.
Yeah.
So that's one.
Yeah.
And then the Stay Puft Man, they melt it.
Yes.
So kind of feel like that's two, right? And then there was seven ghosts that the Ghostbusters caught.
Yeah.
And then there was Zool and the Keymaster. They got turned into statues and then they crumbled. So again, they stopped existing. So overall, we've got two kind of things. So Gozer and Stay Puft.
Yeah.
And then you've got two more that just stop existing. So Zool and the Keymaster.
Yeah.
So that's four. So it's four kind of things that stop existing. And then you've got seven ghosts that got captured.
Yeah.
Which again, stop existing. So it's 2, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. 11.
The kill count on this was really difficult. I actually did look to see if I could find a kill count online. But their kill count was basically you see a ghost that is in theory someone that's dead. So they were like, bing, 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 constantly going off. And I was just like... There was never, and then
I'm only counting the ghosts that got caught.
Yes.
Because they got caught.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's either zero.
Yeah.
Or 11.
Yeah. And I'll be honest with you. I had my jab this week and I am having no side effects other than being absolutely exhausted when it comes to nighttime. Like literally it gets to like 7 o'clock and I'm done. And on Friday, I think it got to like 4 o'clock. And I was done. So when we watched this, I was kind of...
Sleepy.
Yeah, nerds to say that. So I didn't count any dogs. I'm sure there's lots of dogs in this film. I just didn't see any. So I'm counting two terror dogs because they're kind of like dogs. So, so this is your favourite. So Luke, is there anything else you want to say about this film?
Not really. It was just I was amazed by some of the actual kind of casting. So just you mentioning Gozer, one of the people that was potentially going to be Gozer was Pee Wee Herman.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Because they came across Gozer and said, oh, Gozer's a woman. And they were like, no, it's whatever she want. You know, they want to appear at. So it could be anything.
Yeah. So
and, like Gozer could generally be genderless.
Yeah. So originally they actually offered it to Pee Wee Herman, who they didn't go with in the end. So they next point of call, they went to Grace Jones.
Oh, is that who it is?
No. And it's actually just a Russian model actress.
can't see it. And I've never seen, like, Pee Wee Herman anything.
No, he's not a very big kind of British thing.
No, I've never seen, like, there's Pee Wee Herman goes to something, isn't it?
Yeah, I can't. I don't really know all the Pee Wee Herman stuff.
But yeah, no, never seen it before. It's, yeah, it's not a thing here.
It's not, yeah, it's a purely an American thing.
Yeah. I was going to say it's like our Holby City, but it's really not.
No. He's probably more like our Justin Fletcher. Mr. Tumble.
Oh, Mr. Tumble. No. Because Mr. Tumble is purely for special needs children and other children.
Yeah, no, it's probably more, we need a more adult version of Mr. Tumble.
Wait, what's like, it's not Anne and Dec, what's the other people that used to do, like, they used to say bogeys and stuff?
Oh, like Dick and Dom.
Yeah, Dick and Dom. Do you remember Dick and Dom?
Yeah.
What happened to Dick and Dom?
Pee Wee Herman? Oh, Dick and Dom. Oh, I tell you what has happened to one of them. One of them is doing his house up on Instagram.
Oh, is it? Is it nice?
It's just like normal housework stuff. So he's just doing like, he's obviously wants to be a, you know, next DIY SOS person or something like that. But yeah.
Does DIY SOS still exist?
Possibly. I don't know.
I hate DIY SOS so much. It makes me irrationally angry. Oh, do you know what I hear is coming back? Changing rooms.
Why does DIY SOS make you angry at changing rooms?
I think it's the guy, it's the Craig guy that was on like Big Brother. He's like the main DIY SOS guy, isn't he?
No, he wasn't. It was that other guy.
Well, he used to be on it, Craig. Right. It was the other, who's that other guy? He makes me irrationally angry. The one that's, I just want to punch his face in. It makes me, even now I feel my heart rate go up. He makes me so angry. I haven't got some good reason why, but my God, his face just makes me want to smash it.
There's probably some pink fluid flying around the room and it's got into
and what underneath,
it aggressive, yeah.
But yeah, no, I can't deal with him. But do you remember that changing rooms where they do all the pottery? And it's like this woman's favourite thing and she collects pottery and they do it up and they make these floating shelves. And the woman... And it's this like special house designer's like thing. She's like really, really proud of these floating shelves. So she's put all the teapots and mugs all over them. She's like, look how beautiful it is. The light shines. And then the whole thing just falls down. Literally, it just falls from the ceiling. And all these women are crying. And she was like, I've got to take full responsibility for this. I know you said no, I take full responsibility. And this woman is just like, you've just ruined my entire collection of all these teapots.
I just remember everything was made out of MDF.
Yeah. Oh my God. My mum watched, I think I still have scars from this. My mum watched a change rooms and they decided to like texturize the walls.
Yeah.
So you know what you used to do on the ceilings where you used to like
Artex.
Yeah, but it was like to a point. It wasn't like a smooth or a curl. Yeah. It was just to texturize it so it feels like gravel. My mum decided to do the wall that our beds were next to in that and then paint it like a lime green, like vivid green. And then, so she made this wall and pushed our bunk beds against it. And the amount of times me and my sister will wake up with scratches all over us from this like textured wall. And the amount of times you just rolled over into the night and was like, ah, and my sister was like, wall. And I was like, yes, wall. Oh, I hated that thing. God, like when we sold the house, God knows how the people got that off.
See, this is the thing. Why are you excited about changing rooms coming back? It may inspire me to make some green spiky walls.
It's just hilarious. It was like one time they just made like a room just look like an underwater cave. Oh, changing rooms is amazing. The thing is, it's never going to be like 90s changing rooms. No. It's just going to put black taps everywhere.
Yeah.
I think we should rewatch 90s changing rooms.
Yeah.
There was a BuzzFeed article on it on like the worst of 90s changing rooms. It was beautiful.
We shall do some investigations. It sounds like fun. Anyway.
Anyway. Maybe that's what happened to the people at the prison. At the prison that they filmed in that were getting scratches all over them for no apparent reason. Maybe someone like went changing rooms happy at this prison.
I'm thinking AstroTurf on the walls, basically.
Oh, I wish it was AstroTurf. I would die for AstroTurf. No, this was like some medieval saw type stuff. It was pure torture device. I don't know if it was to stop us like hitting into the the wall and to stop like the neighbors banging, like if it was or so you're soundproofing.
Describing it like it should not be in change rooms and more like it's in the new Saw spiral.
Yeah,
film.
Yeah. You know that I've never seen the film, but you know Hellraiser, you know the like his Pinhead. Face of nails. Yeah. That's what this wall was like, but better looking. So it's like when people came in, they're like,
"Who's better,
that's an odd
Hellraiser or
the wall." Oh, right. The thing is, people would come in and see the wall and go, interesting, you know, design choice. You know, okay, went out of the box on there.
Interesting isn't necessarily a compliment, I don't think.
No. Well, what are you going to say when you walk in and you see a spiky green Artex wall on the main wall that you walk into? What would your reaction be, Luke?
Interesting.
Yeah. Like, that's a choice. That's a bold choice. And then just walk away and go to have a look at this normal bathroom. But yeah, it looked like that, but felt like Hellraiser's face. We wonder why I have problems with horror films now. It's because I woke up to a torture device every day. Lucky I survived my childhood.
Your weird cactus walls.
It's like a cactus walls, yeah. Maybe that's what the theme was.
Anywho,
sorry.
We're going with scores?
Okay. Got where we were then. I'll go first because it's your film and you went first last time. So this film, I like it. Oh, one thing we didn't even mention. This film is the last film that your father went to go and see in the cinema.
Yes. Yes. So it is a 1984 film. Yep. Was the last film that my dad saw. Yep. At the cinema.
And I can't pick him down for being a Ghostbusters kind of guy.
No. Basically, they were at Centre Parks.
Okay.
When they watched this. So Centre Parks is a sort of a family holiday retreat.
Yeah, it's nice. It's around a big lake. You go for pancakes. It's a lot of woods. Yeah.
So they went to Centre Parks. So this is 1984, so this is before me.
Yep.
And
the good old days.
Classic Centre Parks, probably raining.
Mm-hmm.
So they needed to kill a few hours. So they went into the cinema and watched Ghostbusters. And my mum and dad did not like it.
Oh, did they not?
Because all of the kids in the film were singing Ghostbusters throughout the whole film because it was height of, well, this, you know, this wouldn't have been, with it being in the cinema at Centre Parks, this wasn't like as it first come out. So no. a lot of people would
I'd
have seen
it before.
So it was just them and hundreds of kids screaming Ghostbusters.
Oh my god.
That was the last time my dad's been
no
to
wonder
cinema.
Why your dad never went to the cinema again.
Yeah.
I don't think I would go back to cinema again.
Yeah. So yeah, Centre Park cinema. It's probably not the best form of cinema.
No. But I remember doing the same. Do you remember when we were on holiday to Guernsey and our ferry had been pushed back?
Yeah.
So we decided to go to the cinema, and in Guernsey back then, they only had one cinema, right?
To this day, Guernsey has one cinema. It's called the Mallard.
Is it still got one screen?
Got one screen. Yeah. It is just a room with chairs in.
Pretty much. It's like a 64-inch screen?
Yeah, there's probably people that have them bigger in
their house. Yeah. It's just like a 64-inch screen with some like normal chairs. It was just like someone's room that they were like, let's just make a bit of money.
Yeah.
And they played, Toy Story 3?
It's the one that they're all...
They all hold hands.
Lotso and they're holding hands. Yeah, I think that's
because I remember being... How pregnant was I? Well, like 5 months or something?
Something like that, yeah.
And I remember it getting to the scene. And we were in cinema with a lot of old people. There's a lot of old people in this room watching Toy Story 3.
Well, there was Guernsey there. There's a lot of old people
on
the island.
Think like Toy Story 3 would get another kind of audience.
It's the only thing that's on. There's nothing happening.
Yeah, I suppose if it's the only thing you're on, you're going to go see it. And I remember being like 5 months pregnant or something. And sitting there watching these toys, like, grab each other's hands as they're going to this hot furnace and just sobbing incessantly.
Just
like,
accepting their fate.
Yeah. They? And, like, you know there's times where you cry in the cinema and you're, like, you're trying to be, like, poised and stuff. I'd gone far, far past that line. It got into, like, Kim Kardashian sobbing stage.
And the thing is... the thing is, in a normal cinema...
It's not, but it's
that's
it's
fine
all right,
because
yeah.
You are plunged in darkness, and you know there's a an element of height
distance
from anybody else. As Devon has mentioned, this is like a living room.
Yeah, it's just like a bunch of dining chairs put together. So I think the like people near me thought I was having like a proper breakdown because it got to the point where there was a bit. I think when it's the music stops and they all just look at each other and you could just hear me go.
Cool.
Well, oh, scores. Yeah, sorry. That was a nice little detour from scores, wasn't it? Yeah, I'm going to go for an 8.
8.
I know that that is higher than I've scored my own favourite film. Mm. But unlike my own favourite film, I would watch this more.
Yeah.
This is a fine film. It's funny.
You can pick it up anyway throughout it as well.
I feel like I feel comfortable watching, letting our son watch this. He wouldn't want to, and he never ever would. Well, not recently or ever, because he doesn't do scary. Even Ghostbusters scary. But it's fine.
I watched a documentary with our son, and it mentioned the whole getting the name rights. And cheered.
Oh, that's when, so cute.
When they got Ghostbusters. Finally got the name Ghostbusters. He was like, yay!
Yeah, so I'm going to go an 8. I don't like, the only thing I don't like about this film is your favourite Bill Murray. I think he's sletchy.
Yeah.
I'd also, another thing, I would have liked to seen the bit that they cut out between Spengler and, is it Janice?
Yes.
Janine?
I think it's...
The receptionist.
Yeah.
They cut out a whole storyline of love interest. Would have liked to seen that. Thought it was cute.
You do see Janine. It is Janine. Yeah, Janine. She also... Linking us back in, another link to something else. She voices Bo Peep.
Oh, it's a Toy Story.
In Toy Story.
Oh, nice.
So a link to a story that you just gave us.
Yes.
So, yes.
See, it's all meant to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, apparently there was loads of more storyline of them. They're sort of there budding
is,
romance.
Yeah, there is.
We only see like a tinge. And it kind of seems an unrequested love because she seems more into him than he is to her.
Yeah.
Would have liked to seen it all. But yeah, I like it. It's fine.
Cool. I pretty much agree, really. I think 8 is... I'm going with a hook and ladder 8 as well. I think 8 is a pretty solid score. I do love this film, so I think there are some problems to it. But I think you could pick it up anywhere and kind of watch it and enjoy.
Yeah. This is a film like I could see being on, like, I think we almost did it, because actually we did, because we were going to watch this film and then we were just sort of flicking through and it was actually on just... a TV channel, and we were just like, should we not? And I think if we weren't going to actually review it, I think we would have watched it that night.
Yeah.
Just because it was on.
Yeah, because it wasn't very first. I think we'd missed the library scene.
Yeah, it's like the first like 10 minutes had gone in.
But we were like, no, we
need our notebooks and stuff.
We need our notebooks and non-adverts.
Yeah, it was on like ITV2.
Yeah.
All right, so that gives us a total of 16, which means Eternal Sunshine has won. It's pipped it by half a point. Which
half a point?
Half a point, yeah. Oh, 16.5.
16.5, yeah.
So and I might say, because always people are like, Devon votes, like, gives her own scores high. I actually scored yours 2 points higher than I put a point 2 points higher than I did my own. So it's not the fact that I do mine high.
Yeah.
It's just the fact that mine are better films.
Yeah. And I voted second as well, so I could have quite easily gone 9. And,
exactly. You could have gone 10.
Yeah.
So no, I have won for how many weeks in a row now? So it's like 3 weeks in a row.
3 for 3.
Yes, I'm awesome.
Yeah.
I always win. Try and beat me. So Eternal Sunshine. So that is our favourite movies done.
Yep.
So I chose I went from like guilty pleasures to favourite films because in my mind they naturally linked. I was like, what's the film we don't want to tell people we like? And then what's the film we tell people we like?
Yeah.
So now you get to choose. What's your theme, Luke?
So there's something that's popped up online that I know almost nothing about.
Yeah.
It's made me think, first of all, it might be good to essentially have our finger on the pulse a little bit more and review a new film.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like a little bit of a format change. And the fact that we'll do 3 weeks of the next topic, whereby we will review this new film. And it doesn't, we can rate it, but it won't account to
the 2 weeks. Cool, because I don't want to win. I don't want to lose.
No. Yeah, so this will be a standalone. This is no one's. This is the world's film. So the new film is Army of the Dead. This is a Zack Snyder film.
Yep.
And it is a zombie film. So I feel like we're going to go to zombies.
Yep.
So it'll be Zack Snyder's Army of the Dead, then followed by... Your favourite or my favourite, whichever way we want to do it.
Zombie films.
I'm not sure what to kind of make of this. I've heard nothing about it. I just know that there's this thing coming out that's a zombie film by Zack Snyder. I don't know how I feel about it because I seem to be one of the only people in the world that did not like Justice League.
I didn't like Justice League. But then I was always tainted because I don't like DC. It was always going to be a losing battle. I don't know how I feel about this film because I might have said again... And this is finger on my pulse. I've seen it today. I might have said before, huge lover of Simon Pegg. He's my favourite.
Yeah.
Years and years and years. He was talking about this film today, seeing as he's a writer and director of his... he was a writer and starring in his own zombie film.
Yeah.
Shaun of the Dead. He was talking about Zack Snyder's Army of the Dead, and he was saying that he likes a slow zombie.
Yeah.
He likes a slow zombie. These aren't slow zombies. You probably didn't know that. These aren't slow zombies.
Yeah.
Luke has like literally not heard anything about this. These are fast zombies, but he was kind of making fun of it, saying that I haven't seen any of this. If you see the zombies from Army of the Dead, he says they look like they're in a contemporary dance group.
Okay.
Because of how they walk and how they sort of move and stuff. And then he was like, well, and then he joked and said, well, they are in Las Vegas and a lot of them, I'm sure, used to be Cirque du Soleil performers. So yeah, of course they would be. And then he sort of did a face like, you know what I'm saying? Sort of like, and then he acted out how the zombies move. And yeah, they do. If his version is anything like actually how they are in the film, it really does look like It is a contemporary dance room. So it'll be interesting to see what these kind of zombies are like, because I don't think they're going to be the usual, you know, Day of the Dead sort of slow walking zombie. I think they, you know, they could be more of like a 28 weeks kind of thing.
Yeah. No, it's interesting to see. It's always interesting to see what people do with zombies, because it is something that's developed over the years, because you have gone from these slow zombies to, like you say, the 28 days.
I've never actually seen 28 days. Oh, sorry. It's 28 days is the first one. 28 weeks is the second, I think. Never actually seen 28 days. I know my sister liked it, but really, the idea of a really fast zombie freaks me out.
Yeah, but like you've seen like World War Z and stuff like that.
It freaks me out.
Yeah.
Like a fast one. Like a slow one, it's kind of like it follows. As long as you run fast enough or like go on a boat, you're good.
You can get away from
A fast one, you could just be sitting here and the next thing you know, someone's jumped on you ripping your heart out. Like, it's just too quick.
Yeah.
Too quick to do anything. I feel like there's no prep.
So we're going to plunge into zombies next week.
Yes.
It's odd to say have our finger on a pulse when we're talking about the undead, but
that's true.
But yeah, that's what we're going to do. So next week we'll be talking the Army of the Dead.
Thanks for listening, and if you like what you hear, head over to our social media pages at LNIW Podcast.
Last Night I Watched can be found on all major podcasting platforms. And while you're there, please subscribe and leave us a review.
Last Night I Watched is also on Patreon. Pledging your support is the best way to help the podcast.
So we would really appreciate it if you could throw us a tip in our virtual tip jar so we can continue to keep watching.
They always smell like vomit and jelly.